I hope you have been enjoying your suppers each night this week, as I have, in the various homes I've been going to. I just enjoyed an extremely good one a few minutes ago, as I have night after night, and I'm full. I know what it is to be full. I don't know what it is to be empty. I think several times in life I've said that I'm hungry, but I really haven't been. I might have said that I'd like to have something to eat, and I did, but I didn't really have to have it. I've never really been hungry. I never had to really go through a famine. But I've been in places where they have. And over in Africa several times, several years, we have had extreme conditions. And the brethren here, such as you who are in this building tonight, have seen fit to send money time and time again to feed the people in Africa. And it's extremely good that you did, and they are extremely thankful that you have. In many cases, you're not allowed to save lives because of money spent to buy food. We've been able to buy food over and over and over again for various ones who would not have had anything to eat otherwise. And in some cases, they've gone sometimes 2 days, sometimes 3 days, without a meal at all. And in several cases, one meal a day. And in several cases, we've had sisters, particularly, and some children too, who've gone along riverbanks and creek banks and dug what looked to them like root food, and they have eaten those and died because of it. One sister I know about was eating grass, and she died too. So I say those things just to let you know that there are people in the world who have famines. They don't produce food, and consequently, as a result of that, they die. And your interest and your support, your concern, has helped in many, many cases in Africa, in some cases in the Philippines as well. I want to talk tonight about a famine situation. This is something that happened many, many centuries ago, but on the other hand, it is something we can relate to because we see around us those things still continuing in the several parts of the world. And when there is a famine, people try to find some way to relieve themselves of it. It may be that they can get help like you've helped the brethren in Africa. Or it may be that they hear that there's an area where there is food and so they go there and try to obtain food. In some cases, it works. In some cases, it doesn't, because when they get there, they find there's no food there either. People there are just as hungry as they were back home, and they're in a worse condition because even they're away from home and nowhere to go, no hope at all, and many of them starve. We have a case situation like that way back in Bible times. This was the time when there was a family in Bethlehem, Judah, who were in a situation of famine, and the entire countryside was. They decided that what they would do is go to another place to seek help from another area and where food might be found. And so the husband and the wife with two small sons left the land of Bethlehem, went to the southeast and to a place called Moab. Now Moab was not a land where the Jews were known. It was not a place where God was respected as it had been in the homeland, but they went there nonetheless, trying to find some way to sustain themselves in this time of famine. And so Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, went to the land of Moab, so the Bible tells us. And when they went there, Elimelech, the father, died. So you begin to see a bad situation made even worse, because here is the breadwinner. Here is the man who wanted to leave the family to find a place of blessing as a place of curse, and he died. So he's taken away. That leaves then the widow and her two sons. But in due time, the sons grow, and they find wives in that strange land, and they marry these two wives. Well, things might appear to be a little better because they at least have been grown now to the point of being married. They're in a land where they find the people that can be their wives, and no doubt they are pleased to that extent. And yet, in the meantime, then, both of these men die. So that leaves this woman, Naomi, the widow, and now the mother who has two sons dead, leaves her by herself with these two daughter-in-laws that are hers. And so she feels like that she is in extremely bad condition, and she is. You've heard about going down, down, down to hit the bottom. That's what she did, just about as low as she could go. Which way can she turn? What can she do? She lost her husband, she lost her son, she has two daughter-in-laws. What in the world can she do? But she hears that way back in the land she came from, after 10 long years, she hears that there is bountiful harvest now. And so she decides, as you would too, and as I would, that I need to go back home. I need to go back home where I'm from, and there I'll find perhaps a way to sustain my life as I continue to get older and older and live. And so having heard of the blessing the Lord has been fit to extend to his people, she turns to go back now to that land. And as she does, verse 8 of chapter 1 of Ruth says, "And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go return each of to her mother's house, and the Lord deal kindly with you, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find each of you in the house of her husband," she means the husband that you will marry again. "Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept." It seems to be very fitting here that there's a touching feeling, because she's been with the girl for a while. They have learned to love her as they love their husbands, who were her sons. And so there must have been a sad, sad time of parting, knowing that, as in those days, they probably wouldn't hear from her again. No telephones and no cell phones, no means of communication except travel. And if she goes back to a strange land, they'll probably never hear of her again. It must have been hard for her, too, because she's leaving the daughters-in-law she's loved, and you see that they are mourning over her leaving. So it must have been a sad, sad time. Yet, on the other hand, it's time for her to go home. And she knows that. And so verse 10 says, "They said unto her, Surely we will return with thee unto thy people." I begin to notice here now something that's striking. They say, in effect, this is my land, this is where I'm from, you ought to go and stay with my people. But they say, no, we're going to go back with you. It doesn't begin to show us that maybe Naomi has had an effect on them, a very good effect on them. They might want to go back with her where she goes. Verse 11 says, "Naomi said, Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there any more sons in my womb that there may be a husband? Turn again." She says, "My daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say, I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown?" She said, "I don't have any more children. I can't have any more children. If I did have another son, our sons, would you wait until they were grown to marry them?" No, you wouldn't wait that long. It'd be unreasonable that you do so. There's no reason for you to go with me. Stay here in your homeland where you're used to. And then she said, "Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me." I want you to notice in particular that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. Have you ever felt like maybe the Lord has turned his back and doesn't know what's going on in your life? Have you ever felt like maybe the Lord doesn't see and doesn't know what's going on in your life? Maybe he has just not considered me in his blessings to help me over this problem I have, this difficulty I have. She said, "The Lord's hand's against me." Have you ever felt that way? Well, she did. She felt the Lord had turned against her. Well, we're going to find out in a few minutes that she felt that way, but absolutely that's not the way it was at all. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah, one of the daughter-in-laws, kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth prayed unto her. And she said, "Behold," that is, Naomi said to Ruth, "Behold, thy sister-in-law is coming back unto her people and unto her gods." So she's going to turn to the religion she's always known. "Return thou after thy sister-in-law." And then we find some very striking words that are often used in wedding ceremonies. This is not a wedding, but the principle we find here is very touching as well. She said to Naomi, Ruth did, "Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, thy God shall be my God." I want to mention that again. Your God, Naomi, is going to be the God I'll serve. There must have been a touch of something here that struck home. "Will thou die, will I die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee from me." So you see, a bond has been built between these two women, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. Orpah has gone back to her people. I don't know what happened to her. I often wonder. Did she get married again? Did she have children? What God did she serve? How long did she live? What about her inheritance? What about her descendants? What happened to them? Of course, I don't know. And we'll never find out on this earth because the Bible doesn't tell us. The Bible's already read this story. So we often wonder, though, about things like that, but that's really not the story. But it is important to know that when people turn away from where God's influence is, then we often lose track of them. And we just wonder what might happen to them and to their souls eternally. But then when Naomi saw that Ruth was steadfast and minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So now you have Naomi and Ruth. They turn, go back to the west, go to Bethlehem, and they're on their journey there. The next verse says, so they too went unto the king to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi? They haven't seen her in 10 years. No doubt she's aged. Probably she doesn't look nearly like she did when she left. May have been strained, may have been tired, probably was. She lost a husband, she lost two sons. She has a daughter-in-law with her. What else does she bring? Sad memories. And they said, is this Naomi? Listen to what she says. Naomi now, as she replies, says unto them, call me not Naomi. The word Naomi is the word that means pleasant. So don't call me my name, my real name, which is pleasant. She says, call me Mara. The word Mara means bitter. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. And she characterizes how she feels. And notice once again, she says, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. She says, I went out full, and the Lord that brought me home empty. Now we have, I think, here a good insight to what we notice about this woman. She had been in a situation where she had known God. She had been among God's people. She went away, and she's had misfortune after misfortune. No way she can look back at that experience and say, it's been a blessing to me. And so she returns home empty-handed, now bitter, as opposed to being pleasant. And the Bible tells us now that she comes home with that feeling in mind. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home empty. Why then call ye me Naomi? Seeing the Lord hath, why then call ye me Naomi? Seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the land of Moab, and that came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. I want to think for a moment about dedication to God. And when I mention that term, I'm thinking in terms of a person who has known God, who's been a child of God, who's been blessed by God, and who's enjoyed God's presence in their lives, and then all of a sudden things turn away from that. Do we lose our dedication? Do we lose our faith? Do we become weak toward those things just because something has happened that we didn't expect or that was not pleasant? Sometimes that happens to people. But I want you to notice that Naomi here, even though those things happened to her, and she felt very bitter, she felt like she had lost what she had ever had before, and she comes home empty again, one thing about it is she still believes in God. And she has not lost for a moment her faith in God. Even though she feels deserted, she still has faith in God. I want you to notice, too, that when she went away into this strange land and had the unfortunate times that she did, she knew where to come back home to. She came back to where God's people were and where God was worshipped. As we look at things of that kind, I want to look at ourselves for a moment and analyze, if I can, some situations that I know about, and probably you do, too, and you can experience some in your mind, at least, as we talk about these things, that you might know that we don't even mention. What about our behavior in the like circumstances? How would we act if this were our situation and we were Naomi? Of course we're not. And it's hard to put ourselves in her place because most of us have never been in that place before. Maybe similar situations or similar situations we might think were similar, but probably not quite that bad off. But try to put ourselves there for just a moment. What we do in life circumstances. Well, let me suggest to you that that has happened in some ways. Some of our people leave where the Lord's church is and where God's people are and where their family is because they have to change jobs. Now, we have somebody here just that way in this community right now, and they decided not to change jobs. They decided to stay here. They lost the job. They decided to stay here rather than move somewhere else. They're making $30 an hour. And they had opportunity to get themselves in a fine financial position, but they want to stay home where the church was. Where they were going, they don't know the Lord's church there. Where they were going to, they're not sure they could find the church to meet with. What about their children? Would the children be reared in a good atmosphere or not? And so they didn't go. They stayed here. There's another thing I can tell you about that did this several years ago. And his income was well over $30 an hour. He was making good money, and the job all of a sudden ceased. He had to transfer, if he had gone, to Minnesota. But he didn't know anything about where the church might be there. We had no contacts there. He had taken his family there, same situation twice I mentioned here. And so he didn't go. He stayed here. Remember the church today, meeting with us today. Now we have some situations like that that we're very pleased with because we know they were dedicated. They didn't let these things where they lost their job and lost their income and lost their hope, they didn't let those things deter them. They stayed where God's people were. I know of another family. Had the same situation happen to them probably 35 years ago. And so they left the home where the congregation was in the Atlanta area, and they were going to go out to the north and to the west for better jobs. And they got better jobs. And they traveled from here to here, to California, back to Louisiana. And after several years' time, having good jobs and making good money, they finally returned to the Atlanta area. And today, they by themselves, they lost their children along the way. The children left the church. Now they're meeting themselves in a home. By themselves, they lost their influence. They lost influence in the children. And now I wonder, if I could ask them the question, I wonder if they would say it was all worth it. I doubt it. Because what was really valuable to them, they lost. The influence of the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren being reared out of the church, not in the church of the Lord at all. So to bring it down home to us, let's be like Naomi. Let's remember where God was. When we leave and go away, let's come back to where God is. First place, let's don't leave. If it's humanly possible to stay where God's people are and not expose our children somewhere else. But in her case, she came back home, able to bring somebody with her. Then we have a young man here tonight I'm very, very pleased with. He has an opportunity to go to college. He has his college paid for. And he has good opportunity. And he's going to college. But he's going to college very close to home, to Wadley. Consequently, he's near home. He's near where the church is. He can come all every weekend. And that's precisely what ought to be done. And yet, when sometimes our children leave and go off to college and are exposed to what they have in the communities where they go, and all of the allurement and the things that lure them away from the truth and to be engaged in things of the world around about them, without the parental control, without the restraint of their parents and grandparents and the brethren at church, they gradually drift away, and after a while, they're gone. I can tell you many cases like that. It doesn't always work that way. There are some men who are dedicated enough, strong enough, have enough stamina to stick, and that's good. But they don't all do that. When your children become old enough to go to college, I'd suggest, if possible, they go to a local college first, at least the first 2 years. Get their feet wet before they become a junior and be exposed then with some preparation. Let's think very seriously about where our children are going to go to school. I received a letter the other day, and I want to read it to you because I think it's ideal to let us understand what some places are doing and what should be done if we have the opportunity. We don't have the opportunity here to do this, but we have similar situations. This congregation sent a letter, and it says, "Dear brethren, this is not a letter to ask you for money." And most time we get letters that say, you know, we're building a building, or we want to buy this or buy that, or we want your contributions. They said, this is not a letter to ask for money. I know it's strange, but it still happens. We're offering you a service if you need it. And the letter went on to say that we are located in a large city where there is a church. And children are coming to this city to go to college. And if you'll let us know of your children who are moving to this city, we will contact them and make sure they know that we are here. We can give them any assistance they need, and they'll feel like they have a church away from home. Very good idea. And let's be prepared to do things similar to that as we had opportunity to ourselves. Maybe not here in Redalia or Woodland, but we have other opportunities similar to that. So let the churches know that we're here and we serve. If anybody you know comes our way, we just recently sent out a request for people moving to Washington, D.C., or to Hawaii, where we have brethren right now going, and also northeastern North Carolina. We have brethren who move there, and we start churches there. So if you know anybody going, let us know. So we're trying to do the same situation. And then on the other hand, there are those who are pulled away by the affairs of our society in which we live. It may be things that allure, such as that which is of an elite nature, maybe a better situation, better job, allure because of things like that. And so how easy to lose our influence as we're ripped away by that kind of influence. And sometimes the pursuit of hobbies or of pleasures lead us away from the Lord and His people. The whole thing, in a nutshell, I'm trying to say is very simple this. Whatever opportunity comes our way, take advantage of it if it's good. But be careful, be very, very careful that we're not influenced by and led astray by those things around us that would draw us away from our faith and our dedication to God. The book of Ecclesiastes has many, many extremely good points of advice in it. But in chapter 11, there are a few verses here that I think we need to read, in particular about what we're speaking about already. And in doing so, he concludes in verse 7, as it gives us away from the young and calls us as we get a little older, to get a little bit more wise at what we're talking about. He says in verse 1 of chapter 11, chapter 12, I'm sorry, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be darkened, or the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the street. When the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Those pleasures or delights seemingly lose their glitter. All throughout the race shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail. Why is that? Because man goes to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Or ever the silver cord be loosened, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, the source of water is no more. He says, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. So all these vanities of life, he says, these things are going to pass away. They won't be here for very long. And understand those things and think wisely about those things, because the days come when you're going to go to your home in eternity, and the dust will be the place for your body to go. So as I think in terms of those things we just suggested and try to tie them in mental and historic, I want you to notice that instead of being influenced, as we just suggested, instead of being influenced by those she went among, contrarily, she influenced those where she went to. Rather than being influenced, she influenced others. Now that is very commendable in her life. It took her 10 years, and finally she's returning back home, but she doesn't come back home empty. Naomi influenced those around her, and I want you to notice her lasting influence on Ruth. Now, you might say offhand, now, wait a minute. She had opportunity to convert both of her daughter-in-laws, but she sent one of them back. But you see, we make up our own decisions. And we make our own decisions, have to stand by what decision we made. So it was Ruth who made the proper decision. It was Orpah who made the wrong decision. Not because Naomi told her to make a wrong decision, but she put the choice before them. But her influence was that Ruth saw fit to her respect for Naomi to go with her back to the land of Bethlehem, where Naomi found that she was from and where her influence instilled from and where she found God to be. I think that gives us another insight too. Your friends, your neighbors, those you talk about, sometimes your children and grandchildren, you're not going to be 100% effective. I wish we were. I wish every time we spoke to somebody and everything we did to try to convert somebody, it worked, but it doesn't always. It may not work not because we're not trying or not because we don't say the right things. It may not work because their heart's just not right and we can't change their heart. We present the truth and we tell the truth, hopefully in a kind way, in a polite way, understandable way, a way to appeal rather than to force someone. But when we present the truth in the right way and they reject it, that's not our fault. The problem is this. We're not going to be 100% effective. Bad thing is, not sometime with our own children and grandchildren. I wish we were, but we're not. And many of us know that from experience. But the fact is, Naomi now has been effective 50% of the opportunity. One of the daughter-in-laws, anyway, comes back with her. And that's the great goal, to be able to convert that one soul, as you'll see in just a few moments. Because that one soul has a great, great deal more than we see on the surface just now. So when we work for the Lord and try to teach people, try to encourage people, don't ever be discouraged. You don't know what seed you're sowing and what in due time that might come forth. The Bible tells us, as we continue farther, that when they come back to Bethlehem, they come to at a time of barley harvest. Now I want you to notice once more that Naomi thought that she was neglected. She thought the Lord's hand had turned against her. Well, it hadn't. She didn't see the whole truth. She didn't see the whole story. She didn't know the whole matter before her. And so consequently, she couldn't see the end of that crooked road she was on. But God knew all the time where he was leading. He knew all the time where she was going. He knew all the time what was going to happen. And he had not forsaken her, not for one moment. Even though she may have thought he had not. You see, they came back at exactly the right time. They came back at the time of barley harvest. And the reason why is because back in those days, we read about in the book of Leviticus chapter 19, Deuteronomy chapter 24, Deuteronomy chapter 25, we read that back in those times there was a situation present among the Jews that God had provided for, not social security, but something far better than that. And what God had designed was simply this. When there's a stranger or someone that's hungry or someone who's passing through, there's a way for them to be fed. Let's suppose now that this is the field of barley. And whatever size it may have been, we'll draw it the size of a rectangle. And this is the field where the barley is growing. Now, the law says that when a stranger or someone hungry comes by and he sees this field of barley, he can eat from it. Now, what he does is he takes from the corners of the field, which are not harvested. They cannot be harvested. And as he goes to eat those, he has a right to. Nobody can stop him. That's his means of security if he doesn't have a garden of his own. Or if he's passing through and hungry. He has the right for that. Or if he finds that there was a cart going through this field, and this cart was being pulled, and one of these sheaves fell off of that cart, then they couldn't pick it up. They had to leave that sheave dropped on the ground. They couldn't pick it up at all. Now you might say, well, that's waste. No, not waste at all. But God realized those things happen. And he realized there'd be people who need to have something to eat that didn't have nowhere to go. And so he says, you don't harvest the corn of the field, or you don't pick up a sheaf that dropped from the ground. That was their social security. Now God knew this all the time, provided for this for Israel, and that was a marvelous plan on God's side, and helped many, many people, no doubt. It's about to help Naomi. Naomi comes back with Ruth, and she tells Ruth, now you go out in this field and you glean. You have the right to do that. And she does. She goes to this field and she gleans. And the owner of the field happened to see this strange new woman out there. He asked who it was. They said, oh, that's the Moabitess that came back with Naomi. She brought her back from the land of Moab. That's her son's widow. And so Boaz tells the young men, he says, well, when she comes through and she has the opportunity to glean in this field, he says, let her glean as is normal. And then he talks to Ruth and he discusses matters with her. He becomes attracted to her. He tells the men, he says, if you go through the field, you purposely drop some of those sheaves out. Don't accidentally do it, purpose to do it. And so he provides for them to have ample sustenance as they go on their way. And as the story continues on, we notice that Ruth is well received, Naomi is well received as they go by, and they begin to prosper. So while things look bad and look like there was no hope, all of a sudden we see hope here. They've come back home, there is time, there is opportunity to eat, the harvest is on, the harvest is ready for them to glean from, and so they come back at exactly the right time. Could have come at a different time, they didn't. And God saw fit in all these things to bless them, have his hand upon their shoulder as they're coming by. Now, I want to notice a couple more things, too, about this. We don't read in the story of Naomi and Ruth a single thing about somebody there in that community getting jealous. Now, sometime among brethren we see jealousy, and that's sad. I hope we can see that become less and less and less as we grow older. And occasionally we see that. Not often, but occasionally. Where people are jealous of someone else. You see, those people could have said, Elizabeth Naomi, she went away when we didn't have anything, and now we have them, she's coming back to take what we have. 10 long years, she didn't work for it, she didn't earn anything, why should we have any pity on her? They didn't take that attitude at all. They received her with open arms. They recognized her, is this Naomi? Had pity on her. Boaz had pity on them. And they are allowed to grow and prosper. There was no jealousy, there was no resentment, there was no envy. So it had open arms receiving them as it should have been. So among us, when we find someone who stumps their toe and falls, or someone who has something happen to them not pleasant, let's receive them with open arms. Now I'll stop here and say, I've seen you brethren do it over and over and over again. There are needs all along that arise, and you have dug into your treasury and you help those people. Some from your own pockets, some individually, and some as a church. There's a brother here about 3 nights ago who's in bad financial straits just now. And several churches here have given him money. We appreciate that. It's not a fact then that you are being condemned here. You're being commended because of what you have done. Let's maintain that among us as we continue on. So we ought to receive those people not with harshness or ingratitude or self-righteous. We ought to receive people like that who are in need and who are really trying their best to give them that helping hand that they need to extend it to them. We may well stand in the way of spiritual growth for someone if we don't handle the matter as we should. As Naomi and Boaz influenced Ruth, so we ourselves may be able to influence others, and maybe sometime a cooperative action. Remember Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, I have planted, Apollos has watered, so we have a cooperative effort there. Paul planted the seed, Apollos came on and watered that spiritual seed, and God, though, gives the increase to it. So we all ought to work together to the point at which it's not a matter of who does it, it's not a matter of glory or praise or honor, it's a matter that we're simply servants. We work together hand in hand so the Lord receives the glory and not someone else. So let's don't seek glory among ourselves. Let's try to let the Lord receive the glory in all that we do. Let's make sure that we surrender ourselves to Christ, that Him has the glory and not ourselves. But I want you to notice that these matters continue to work against Naomi. First of all, there was a famine that came her way. That's her first stumble that she made. And then secondly, there was her husband who died. Thirdly, there were her sons who died. And so certainly she had herself in a terrible situation, she felt like, in this strange land. Sometimes we, too, are not able to see the end of the road that's before us. Sometimes that road is crooked. Sometimes that road is full of bumps and curves. And sometimes those potholes seem to be very, very deep. And they are sometimes. But the Lord always knows where we are with the road leading to and how to handle the matter for us. In the book of Hebrews chapter 11, we read here, beginning with verse 7, about similar situations. Here the writer of Hebrews says, by faith Noah, being warned of God, of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world, became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Now when Noah was told to build the ark, there had never been an ark built before. There had never been a flood before. There had never been rain before. How in the world does Noah now expect to do what has never been done simply because God said to do it? But the very point is he worked by faith and he did what God told him to do. The next verse says, by faith Abraham, and he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive inheritance, obeyed. He went out not knowing whither he went. Abraham was way over near the river of Euphrates. And God says, you get up from here and you go where I'm going to tell you to go. He had never been there before. Didn't know where he was going to. Didn't know what would happen to it. Didn't know what kind of land it would be. Didn't know anything about it. He said, God said, go, and he went. Now, I think we can take a good, strong lesson from these things to understand that when God speaks, he knows exactly what he's talking about. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob and heirs with him of the same promise. Now, the reason why is because he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. So Abraham knew, no matter what I don't know, God does know. I'll do what God says for me to do. And that's precisely where we stand here today. Verse 23 says, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid by 3 months by his parents, because they thought he was a proper child. And they were not afraid of the king's commandment that his sons would be killed. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, he used to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. She has been rather to suffer afflictions for the people of God and enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Why was that? Esteeming the reproach of Christ, greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the Lord. So here we find Moses now is one who, like we mentioned with Abraham and Noah, were those who didn't see the end of the road, but they knew God did. And they knew where I was leading to because God was there, and they followed him. Now let's take the same courage that they had. And as we'll see in just a moment, that's what drew Naomi back to the land of Bethlehem. She was not drawn back there because of some other reason than the fact that this is where I'm from, this is where the truth is, this is where God is, and this is where I can find refuge. And we always know God is there as members of his church. Let's maintain that attitude. There's much need of patience in our Christian life. James tells us the trying of your faith worketh patience. So our faith is tried many times. We come to almost a brick wall. We don't know which way to go. But our patience allows us to stand there and the Lord makes the decision for us and then we go forward. But let your patience have a perfect works that it may be perfect and entire, complete and entire, lacking nothing. We may not be able to see the end of that crooked road I'm talking about, but God is there, we can trust him, and we should do it. I was talking to some brethren in Kentucky some time ago, and I was thinking about this as I spoke it to them. Today, at lunch, there was some tea on the table. Tonight, at supper, there was some tea on the table. Now, that tea was in some kind of a vessel, and it was dry. And tea didn't taste good, was no good at all, wouldn't do anything for you at all in that dry vessel. But you know what happened? You put it in hot water. That's where the real flavor of the tea came out. Now, sometimes when we get in hot water, that's where the real flavor and our lives come out. When we've tried, when we've tested, and we prove our stamina, that's when God works through us. We have that strength of tea in us. We just let ourselves, that hot water, bring it out. Sometimes it does. Difficulty sometimes comes our way. God knows what we can take. It won't put on us anything more than what we have to endure. He was through this unpleasant and certainly undreamed of circumstances that this Moab stranger became a follower of God and was instrumental in fulfilling God's plans for eternity. We turn back once again to the book of Ruth. As we turn to the last chapter of Ruth, I want to read to you some things that took place, beginning in chapter 4 and verse 13. Boaz and Ruth now have a child. This is something that this mother-in-law probably thought she'd never have when she saw her sons die. But now she has a grandson. And so verse 13 says, Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. When he went unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which has not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. You see, in a case like this, when the husband died of Ruth, then the one she would marry next, the next near kinsman to her husband, would have a child born and the first husband's name will be carried on through him. That way nobody will lose their land rights, their inheritance in Israel. That was God's plan too. So Naomi says that, in effect, my line's going to continue now through this girl I brought back with me from Moab. The Lord has not left thee without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. He shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which is loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And so they say, Naomi, you're well blessed. You had 10 years of difficulty. You had unseen things you didn't dream of happening to you. You thought it was a very sad situation. All those things happened to you. You're bitter where you were pleasant, but now you've come home. And look what's happened. Now you have a grandson. And you have a daughter-in-law which is better than seven sons, they tell her. And so verse 16 says, Naomi took the child, laid it in her bosom, and became nurse to it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. Now listen, he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron, Hezron begat Ram, Ram begat Amminadab, Amminadab begat Nashon, Nashon begat Salmon, Salmon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. So see, he was Naomi, who thought everything gone out against her. Now she becomes the great-great-grandmother of King David himself. You see what the Lord had in mind for her all the time? Through Ruth. And Ruth was one of three Gentile women that figures in the line of the birth of Jesus Christ. We never know what the Lord has in store for us. What does the Lord have in store for you? Now, you don't know, and I don't know. I do know this. He has something in store for you. It may not be becoming the mother of King David. That won't ever happen again. You may not have a son that's going to be rich or famous, or a daughter that's going to be a movie star. I hope you don't. But on the other hand, there's no telling what God can use you for. He can use you and your influence 10 generations in the future and bring something marvelous on the scene. If you'll only serve him now and not be bitter, but be pleasant, knowing the Lord is with you. Every step you take, the Lord is there, if you let him be there, and if you follow him faithfully and dedicatedly. We need commitment. That's precisely what we need as members of the Lord's church. Commitment. We know God's there. We know Christ is the Son. We know we need to obey him. We know heaven's waiting for us. Let's not let anything deter us in that voyage to heaven. But that's not the end of the story. We have read verse 22. He says, Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. And when we turn to the book of Matthew chapter 1, beginning with verse 5, maybe down through verse 16, we find that 30 generations later, this line of descent began through Naomi and Boaz, leads to the birth of Jesus Christ. So not only was she the great-great-grandmother of King David, she is the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So by her action, her determination, her commitment to God, not forgetting God, coming back home and leaving the influence she had, she became the great ancestor of Jesus Christ himself. I think you can see by this story that God has something in mind for you and me. I don't know what it is. But I do know that if we allow ourselves to be used by him, instrument in his hand, there's no end to the good we can have, the influence we can wield, and the glory we can bring to Almighty God by our faithfulness. Let's determine to do that this night. And in doing so, we'll be blessed. We'll bless those around us. God will be honored and glorified by the stand we take for truth. As we stand to sing this hymn, if there's some way we can aid you in better serving your Lord, you let your wish to know.